Hey, welcome to In the Thick. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela. It's Friday and it's ITT Sound Off.
And can you hear the jackhammers out my window?
Can you hear the jackhammers?
They are there. You're going to be hearing jackhammering behind me every now and then.
Welcome to Harlem.
You know, we're still recording from home. Anyway, so that's the quick update of the jackhammers. We're going to get on to our first topic. We're going to talk about the media reckoning that's happening right now.
Mm.
Look, yes, I feel so sad because I feel like George Floyd, pobrecito, is such an angel.
Mm.
But his murder, and I would say Breonna Taylor's murder, Tony McDade, Ahmaud Arbery, I mean, these are angels that in this moment have really pushed the Black Lives Matter movement into reckoning with racist roots.
Yeah.
But at a level where it's impacting so, so much. And in that sense, Julio,
yeah,
and everyone who is listening to this, we are living through a totally historic moment. You know, movies will be made about this. They'll be like, hey, way back in 2020. But the truth is that our business, the business of journalism, is also having a reckoning. You know,
yes,
as you know, Julio, my reckoning came 10 years ago when I created Futuro Media, right?
Like, welcome to the club, everybody.
Or your reckoning was 8 years ago when you created.
But my reckoning was also seeing your reckoning. And then I'm like, I want to reckon with her. So we're reckoning together now.
Yeah, just to be clear. So I created Futuro Media. You created Latino Rebels.
Yeah.
Together we create In the Thick. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, over in the mainstream media, all kinds of shit is happening, y'all. All kinds of people are just like freaking out. This week, Barry Weiss, a very conservative opinion writer for the New York Times, resigned, or as she told Weiss, she self-expelled from the paper, citing a hostile work environment. If I would have quit for every hostile work environment. Okay, so reminder, Weiss is one of the people who signed that Harper's letter that we talked about in last week's show.
Oh, yeah.
If you haven't listened, stop now, go back and listen, then come back. So, of course, it's not a coincidence that now there's this kind of sense of a new McCarthyism.
Mm.
Oh, come on. I'm like, girl, no, it's not. She's calling it this thing, but, you know, it's happening at the same time that journalists of color in mainstream media organizations that are very powerful organizations are actually taking this moment to do the reckoning and hold their organizations accountable when it comes to race.
Right. And you know, the Weiss thing when she said self-expelled, when I heard the news, Maria,
ay, Dios,
it instantly reminded me of one of my favorite movies, That Thing You Do by Tom Hanks, where there's a part in the movie where one of the leads says, I quit.
I quit. I quit. I quit, Mr. White.
Like, you quit. Barry Weiss, self-expelled. You quit. You walked away. And like, I'm with you, Maria. If I had the luxury of quitting all my work situations, man, and writing like 3-page resignation letters. But anyway.
To the publisher of the New York
Times. Yeah, to the publisher, to the person that signs your checks and be like,
let me tell you.
But this is interesting because I think this all really comes down to something you said this week, Maria, on Sam Sanders' show, It's Been a Minute on NPR. About the role of POC journalists in this industry. And one thing that struck me,
I'm so proud of what you're doing, but also the fact that you have to make your own production company shows that the NPRs and the PBSs and the CNNs in many ways don't get it and can't help people like you tell the stories that you need to tell.
I was thinking about that as I was thinking about our interview, Sam, because you know, my husband calls me a guerrera, a warrior. And then as I was thinking about our conversation, Sam, I was like, well, that's great. I like that. But you know what? I don't want journalists of color to have to be warriors order to be able to work as journalists.
Just have a job. Yeah,
to be able to work as journalists of conscience who can bring their entire selves into the newsroom, who are going to be seen, who are going to not only be seen and heard, but actually put into positions of power to be the ones who are listening and making the decisions about, yeah, we want that story on the front page. And the headline is going to say that exactly.
Of all the things that you said, that's the one that hit me the hardest because I just want to be a freaking journalist, just like you. So thank you for saying that because I think people need to hear more of that, especially POC. And of course, this is what happens. How many times have you said this? I mean, since I've known you, this is all about newsrooms being majority white. Perfect example is that when you have Donald Trump on CBS News on Tuesday saying that more white people are killed by law enforcement than black people, there's no immediate pushback or fact checking, which is like, oh, thanks for saying that, Mr. President. And that's been the theme. That's the thing that's just not mind boggling. I'm not surprised anymore. I mean, mainstream media, they're allowing the president to spout these claims as if they're fact.
They're lies.
Right.
With an agenda.
Right. And then journalists, because they're afraid to challenge power, just move on to the next question. So, I'm stenographing here. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. But then after that interview aired, right, journalists started sharing data showing, wow, surprise, black people are more likely to be killed by police. I mean, the fact that they even had to do that in this current movement for racial justice, it just shows the state of media in 2020, Maria.
So some people have heard me say it's the U.S. mambo, 3 steps forward, 650 million steps back.
What a mambo. That's a mambo. What a mambo.
You know, you can't dance a mambo like that. But that's what it feels like. So on the one hand, you know, Julio, yeah, we are participating in a moment in history where people are stepping up and really pushing back. But at the same time, it's like, how can we have so much access to information and yet at the same time have so many dumb people making dumb decisions? I'm sorry, specifically regarding the world of facts.
Yeah.
The world of journalism, right, where we're supposed to be pushing back, asking for truth. I have to say, first of all, it was great to be interviewed by Sam Sanders. I mean,
yeah,
I love being interviewed by a pro, and that was a lot of fun. And I was very encouraged by the fact that so many people are sharing that conversation that we had with several journalists of color.
Yes.
About what it is to be a journalist of color in the mainstream and surviving, and this whole notion of objectivity. And I think that's what's also really crystallizing for a lot of people, which is, you don't get to decide what objectivity is. You know, Walter Cronkite, may he rest in peace, is not the arbiter of objectivity. It doesn't exist. We all come at this from different perspectives. But as you said, Julio,
yeah,
it's very simple. We would like to be journalists doing our job. And we train as journalists and we have ethics as journalists. And you know what? On this show, we do drop a lot of F-bombs and we get a little, what's the word?
Salty?
One more?
Passionate? I don't know.
Well, so maybe we might say a few salty things, but you know what? We have ethics and we remain committed to those ethics. And so for those of us who are watching this media reckoning, we are saying, you know what? If you do not report about us legitimately, if you do not give us voice, we all suffer because you don't have an audience. And if you don't have an audience, ¿qué pasó con media? ¿Qué pasó con journalism?
Yeah. You know, last thing I'll say, you know, I wrote the Goya opinion piece.
Oh my God, I had to ask you about the Goya piece. You got all kinds of craziness going
on. Yeah, it was an opinion piece grounded in fact, but I got so much craziness and everything people say about journalists of color that I'm being biased, agenda driven, I'm a socialist, I work for Castro. You know, it all happened. It's like, go back to Mexico. I mean, I was told to go back to every Latin American country.
No, Julio.
But here's the thing I'm going to tell you, Maria.
Ay, Dios.
When you say Guerrero, when you say that, the skin that you develop, it's like, I feel like I have like hard ass armadillo skin now. Like, you're nothing. I am so locked in to representing my community that you can toss so many things my way and we're going to push through this. And we are.
You know, Julio,
yeah.
If we left every time that we felt slighted because of who we were.
Yeah.
And thinking like, oh, well, I got a bank account or I'll find another job or I'll get high. We could never do that. We did have to push through. And the message to the young journalists listening is, do not give up.
Don't give up.
Do not give up.
And we're here. And reach out to us. I'm serious. Reach out to us. We're here. We have stories. We will make your skin tougher. Right. But let's end with a positive note. Our good friend Ed O'Keefe at CBS News, he tweeted this out. Tune in when 7 Latino reporters at one network tell the story of how Latinos are struggling with COVID-19 only at CBS News. Pandemia will be on CBSNews.com and CBSSN Sunday night at 9 Eastern Time. All Latino reporters anchored by Marielena Salinas.
My girl.
That's how things change. So as much as CBS News did a really poor job with President Trump, I'm kind of hopeful that they're doing this pandemia special. So anyway.
That's what it looks like when you put people of color, Latinos and Latinas, into positions of power. It ends up on the network news.
All right. Well, that felt good. All right. All right. Let's move on to our second topic. it's going to be an update on the coronavirus pandemic. The country is still setting record daily numbers of cases and deaths. Yet it's the same cycle of total incompetence from leaders. So let's focus on Georgia. Wednesday, Georgia had its second highest number of cases since the pandemic started. So Governor Brian Kemp signed an executive order that same day banning cities from mandating masks. Okay, so these high cases, and he's like, you're not required to wear masks. Instead, the order only strongly encourages mask wearing. Then on Thursday, he filed a lawsuit to stop Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms from mandating masks in the city. And this was Mayor Bottoms' response in a video news conference on Thursday.
The governor has taken a formal position on masks in the state of Georgia. So whatever the motivation is, I think that at the end of the day, we all have to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. And what the scientists are telling us is that the right thing to do is to wear a mask. What healthcare professionals are telling us is that they are being overrun in our hospitals. It's a simple thing to do. It's an easy thing to do. And we will just continue to push and ask people to do it despite the disagreements that we may have.
I mean, there it is.
Hello.
I mean, mask wearing in the United States has become politicized, but every healthcare expert is in agreement. You know how they say, you know, 4 out of 5 dentists agree about sugarless gum? It's like 100 out of 100% of all healthcare experts say you should be wearing a mask right now.
Wow.
And so, of course, there have been measures taken to fight the spread. In Alabama, for example, Governor Kay Ivey, where the virus has continued spreading, recently issued a mask mandate this week. But come on, we know the response is too late. This is the part that I'm struggling with, Maria, and you too. It's like so many lives could have been saved throughout so many parts of this country.
So every night this week, I have been walking through the park with my little dog, Walter, and I'm crying. And I feel like the entire country is being gaslit. I feel like I'm going back to March when I was getting sick and seeing the numbers and remembering, you know, all the daily news conferences, just watching the numbers as my fever was getting higher and higher and just like, oh my God, and kind of suffocating. And it's like, I feel safe in my city, but
right.
I'm suffocating for the rest of the country. I texted you on Thursday night because I came home and there was the news, you know, Victor, un cantante increíble from the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, yeah.
And a friend of my family's and of my husband's passed away. No me pidas que te deje. No lo vas a conseguir. El amor que llevo dentro, el amor que llevo dentro me acompañará hasta el fin. You know, for me, I don't understand. I'm like, what is the intention to politicize this? And I keep on asking, Julio, and you know this, what would have happened if we had a federal response?
A real one.
As critical as I am of President Obama and of every president.
I think like James Garfield would have done a better job. And like, he's one of the worst presidents ever.
Ever. So how is it possible that we are witnessing people in our country making these decisions? I don't understand, Julio. You said when we were prepping for this show, you just said, I feel just completely overwhelmed.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who we follow on social media have been, just by chance, just like, this has been a really, really, really tough week. And it's like, we've had tough weeks. This is another one.
Right. Let me just share one thing from our guest, Alexis Madrigal, who was on In the Thick earlier this week. You got to catch that. And he put it this way in his latest for The Atlantic, and I'm quoting, "The country cannot get back to normal with a highly transmissible deadly virus spreading in our communities. There will be no way to just, quote, live with it. There will only be dying from it for the unlucky and barely surviving it for the rest of us."
Which brings us to Onoval Perez Montufa. May he rest in peace. A Mexican immigrant,
right.
He became the third person that we know of to die from COVID-19 while in ICE custody. I do say that we know of. He was being detained in Glades County Detention Center in Florida. He died in a hospital. According to data from ICE, more than 3,000 immigrants in custody have tested positive for COVID. You know, they don't care. I got a call from someone in prison yesterday, and they were saying, I'm thinking about getting parole. And then suddenly it was like, actually, not getting parole because that might mean I could end up in an ICE detention facility. I'd rather stay in prison.
Wow. Wow.
That's what we're talking about. We're going to move to our final topic.
Mm.
Really sad.
Mm.
I think so many of us have been thinking about actress Naya Rivera, who passed away last week. She had taken her beautiful 4-year-old little boy on a boating trip to Lake Piru in California and went missing. Her body was recovered from the lake this past Monday, 5 days later. Authorities say they believe that Naya prioritized getting her son back on the boat after it had drifted and, you know, basically saving him over herself.
Wow.
And after pushing him onto the boat, getting him up there, that apparently she drowned.
No.
The way she lived her life was exemplary and really beautiful. She was an outspoken advocate for social justice, for Black Lives Matter, for the LGBTQ movement. She was super well known for her fabulous role on Glee, where she played the kick-ass Santana Lopez, openly queer Afro-Latina. Dude, I remember watching this with my daughter and we were like, see?
Hmm.
This is who we are as Latinos and Latinas.
You're the one who complained to Principal Figgins about me.
Yeah, and I do it all over again after that performance.
You're messing with adult things here, Santana. This is my job. This is my life.
This is my education, and it's not a joke to me, although it seems to be one to you.
What are you talking about? They all loved my performance.
Because they don't know any better. It's your fault. You're their teacher. You went from La Cucaracha to a bullfighting mariachi. Why don't you just dress up as the Taco Bell Chihuahua and bark the theme song to Dora the Explorer? You don't even know enough to be embarrassed about these stereotypes that you're perpetuating.
That's not fair.
Isn't it? What did you want to be when you grew up? I mean, why did you become a Spanish teacher, Mr. Shu?
Because it was the only teaching position open at the time.
You know, and I didn't spend a lot of my time before this thinking about Naya Rivera, to be honest, you know, but now
that's how you're thinking
she
about
comes to me. She yeah. comes to me. I'm thinking, how could this happen?
Mm.
You know, as the story becomes clearer that she saved her son. So it's very sad.
Yeah. And her death, I mean, just seeing the reactions from people, how her work resonated with so many underrepresented communities and that her voice is a Black Puerto Rican voice in media. You know, I've spent most of my career, if not all my career, talking about how white the narrative in Puerto Rico is, or even in the diaspora. And Naya was someone who was challenging that and was being listened to. And just this notion, you know, as any parent, it's just, you would do anything for your kids, right?
Mm.
It's like, I will do anything for my kids. And here was Naya Rivera doing anything for her child with love. And she's going to be missed. She's going to be missed.
So in these moments when we're thinking about so much loss, I'll just say this, Julio. One of the things that I'm doing is that in the mornings, instead of crying, I'll just be like, I'm going to focus on gratitude and being grateful for what we do have. And I'm so grateful
yeah.
that you and I have this show, that we have a staff.
Yeah,
I am grateful that we have this space.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful to you, dear listener, for listening. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Uno, dos, tres.
Dear listener, a little bit of homework, okay? Go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us. Please. It really helps. Also, you can listen to In the Thick on Pandora, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, you can find us on our new and improved website.
InTheThick.org. InTheThick.org. Check it out. It looks beautiful.
Thank you, Julio. And shout out to Luis Luna for all of your work on the website. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at In The Thick Show. Like us on Facebook. Tell your friends and family to listen. In The Thick is produced by Nicole Rothwell, Noor Saudi, and our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow, Harsha Nahata, with editorial support from Erica Dilday. Our audio engineers are Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Leah Shaw. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our intern is Ariel Goodman. Thanks to Raul Perez for recording me here at home, where it looks like the jackhammers have taken a break. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Kept and CCK Records. Dear listener, have some time off. And we love you. Bye.
Peace, y'all.
We did as much as we could. We closed the curtains. We closed the windows. You know, I pushed the mic away from it, but it is a jackhammer and it is coming and going.
Can you do one more thing, Maria?
Yeah.
Open up the window and be like, ¡Cállense la boca, carajo! ¡Estoy grabando! No, you don't want to do that? Okay.
Wait, roll up the window. God damn it, I said quiet on the set. Shut the fuck up.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.